How do I get started is one of the most common questions I get from entrepreneurs who are looking to build a business. Welcome to Marketing Simplified, where we take complex marketing strategies and insights and simplify them so that you can use them to grow your business. I run an eight-figure agency, and my hope is this podcast will help you leverage the information we've learned from helping startups to Fortune 500 companies get to the next level. Thanks for being here. Building a business is extremely nuanced, and depending on the type of company you want to build, the market you're going into, what it is that you're offering, the path is going to look very different for a lot of you. However, in all of our years in marketing, advertising, and just business growth in general, we have seen that there are six stages that you're going to want to think through when building a business. And it makes a lot more sense to think about this upfront rather than after you've started. Now, any framework, you're going to iterate on it over time, because as you get information, as you see new opportunities, you're going to make those strategic changes, pivots, whatnot. However, you want to have that framework in mind as you're going, because that helps you be strategic through the process. In this episode, I'm going to break down these six different stages, and I hope that if you have either started a company or thinking about starting a company, this adds a lot of value to you and saves you a lot of pain, money, and heartache as you go through the process of building your company. Stage one is product market fit. You want to figure out whether you have something that the market wants. Now, think about what it is that you're planning on starting and whether there is already proof of concept out there that tells you whether you have product market fit and this is something that could be successful. So, if you're starting a service business, anything that already exists, how big is the audience in your area, whether that's a certain specific geographical location around where you're located or nationally? How big is the audience? How many people fit into that category? What problem are you solving for them? And why would they need you? For most of you, you're going to be able to figure out whether you have product or market fit without spending a whole lot of money, right? Like, so if you're opening up a burger joint in a city where there's three other burger joints, you know that people in your area like hamburgers, especially if the other three locations are doing well. So you have a good understanding that there is an audience in your area. And if you're able to provide value greater than your competition with the right exposure and marketing over time, you're going to be able to drag people out of their stores and into yours. However, say you're launching something that's brand new, either a product or a service, you don't really know necessarily whether the market is going to respond to it. So if you're launching a product, you're developing or manufacturing or building something that is brand new. And when I say product, that also applies to software, right? So you're solving what you perceive is a problem in the marketplace, but what you're doing doesn't really exist. The only way to really prove that product market fit is to start selling it and seeing how the market responds to it. This doesn't necessarily mean that you have to explode out of the gates. And if you don't sell a lot of product or sign up a lot of people for your software really early on, that the product or your company is not viable. You just need enough to go right to be able to give yourself the confidence that there is product market fit in this space. You're really just looking for proof of concept. On the service end or on the retail end, that works too. I mean, I'll give you an example. Topgolf has absolutely exploded in the last few years, right? And our offices are here in Pasadena, and it is impossible to get a tee time on a golf course in Pasadena, especially a public course, if you haven't booked well in advance. So I've been thinking about opening an indoor retail location where instead of a full Topgolf style field where you're hitting balls into, you've got those digital golf bays, the simulators, plus, you know, you add in a restaurant, you add in drinks and the rest of it, and you make it something fun. But golfers also have this place that they can always go to at any point and, you know, reserve a hitting bay and they can start hitting. So this exists around the country. There's a lot of independent as well as franchise opportunities that do this. So I know that the model works. However, I don't for sure know that that model works here in Pasadena. My thought process tells me that it should work because there's such a massive demand for golf and golf availability, especially in the form of courses in this area. But something like this has not been done before. So if I was to go down this path, I'm going to be taking a chance. I'm going to have to put money up for capital, build out a facility, invest all of the money and time into it, and hope that it works. And public reaction to what it is that I build will tell me whether I have product market fit. Now, this is an example that would take a massive capital outlay in order for me to be able to accomplish something like this. But for most businesses, that's not the case. You don't need to necessarily put up a whole lot of money to test the market and see whether there is an actual market for what it is that you're selling. I'm a big fan of going early to market. Many businesses, especially in the product space, take way too much time and want to perfect what it is they're building before they get it out into the hands of consumers. The problem is you want early feedback, right? Like, all you're trying to do is figure out, is this something that the market wants? And you can always improve the product over time. Reid Hoffman famously had that quote where he said, an entrepreneur should be embarrassed by the first iteration of their product. And I don't necessarily agree with that specifically, but I definitely agree with the sentiment. You want your product to be good enough that when people get it, they're satisfied, but you don't necessarily want it to be perfect because there's a lot of time into getting it there. And if there isn't a fit with the market or you're going to have to make adjustments, you want to be able to do that as early on without spending as much money as possible. Look really closely at your competition. Everyone wants to be first to market, and people have the misconception that being first to market is a good thing. It can be. But oftentimes, you're the one who has to solve all the problems. And then companies and competitors who come along after you make their decisions based on the hardships and the struggle that you've had to go through. And you sort of prove the model for them. You can do exactly the same thing. So by using some logic, looking at competition out there and seeing whether there is demand based on what competition is doing, especially if you're starting something that either exists or has other companies that are sort of adjacent to what you do, you're able to gain a lot of information and get a good concept as to whether there is product market fit for what it is you're doing. However, what you're really going to find out is when you start selling. Once you establish proof of concept and product market fit, either through doing research on what's around you or by actually doing small tests with your product or service, now you're going to go into step two, which is identifying a target audience. Identifying a target audience is not the same as identifying whether there is product market fit, and it's important for you to understand that. Identifying your audience is diving into the specific personas that your product or service appeals to. This is one of the most crucial aspects of your business and marketing strategy because a lot gets built on top of this. And if you don't understand your audience, you're going to have a lot of problems later on. You're going to waste a ton of money and a ton of time. You have to remember that you are selling to people, and people buy things based on emotion. We are all emotional buyers at our core, and we want things that enhance our lives or solve our problems, whether those are big problems or small problems. The more you understand your audience, the better you'll be at marketing to them effectively and tapping into those key points that turn people into customers. You may have a product or service that appeals to many audiences. You want to know each one of those audiences independently because they buy for different reasons. Don't use a one-size-fits-all approach, which has one strategy that tries to reach everyone. I like to use the example of a low-calorie protein bar. There's a ton of different groups that a low-calorie protein bar can appeal to, but they appeal to each group for very different reasons. A bodybuilder could buy a low-calorie protein bar because they're looking to gain muscle and reduce calories. A business person could buy a low-calorie protein bar because they want healthy, quick snacks while they're super busy and are just able to pull it out of their pocket. Someone who has diabetes may be looking to increase protein intake and reduce carb intake. So while this product could appeal to everyone or a lot of people, it appeals to the different people in the umbrella for very different reasons. And if you make it all one audience, it's going to be really hard for you to structure a compelling message that hits the key trigger points to all of those different people at the same time. Remember that all of the digital platforms that people use for advertising are really nothing more than vehicles to be able to reach actual real people, your target audience. So you want to really, truly understand that audience, why they buy, why the different sectors within your overall umbrella audience buy differently, so that you can structure your messaging accordingly. But more so ever, so that you deeply understand at a gut intrinsic level what it is that you are solving for each one of these people within the audience and how they are different. It's going to make you way more effective when you start building your advertising strategy and your marketing strategy. This is where things start to get really nuanced based on the type of business you are, but also based on your time and resources available, which is the next step, which is finding a way to reach them. So by now you have identified product market fit, you've defined an audience, and you need to find a way to reach your audience. When determining how you're going to reach your target audience, I like businesses to do two things. One, I want them to map out what is the most optimal way from an advertising and marketing or sales perspective to reach the audience. And then what is practical at this point in your journey? Here's the reason I want business owners to do this. I always want you to have at the top of your mind what the most efficient, most optimal way is to reach your target audience, because ultimately that's what's going to lead to the greatest profitability as your business scales. However, at the same time, I'm also aware that what's optimal doesn't mean it's also practical. If you're just starting off and you're not raising a ton of money, you may be cash strapped. You may be working a job while you're building your company, and you may have time limitations. You may not have all of the resources to do what's optimal, but I want you to have both strategies at the top of your mind. There are many ways to reach an audience, especially today. You can create content organically on social. You can run social advertising. You can invest in search marketing, either in the form of Google Ads or SEO. You can do TV commercials or YouTube TV. You can spend money on radio. You can do influencers. You're going to want to figure out what works best for you based on your unique situation. I want to do an example for both a product business and a service business, because I think it will help illustrate the differences and the variances. So let's say you're an apparel brand and you make athleisure gear like a Lululemon or Fabletics. If budget wasn't an issue, I'd start by building a really slick website that really fits your brand and communicates consciously and subconsciously your unique selling points. I'd spend a lot of time thinking about the outward-facing brand and how it's positioned in the marketplace. I'd then go into search and social. I'd use search in the form of Google Ads to go after those searching for types of products I'm selling. I'd also go right at the competition. So if they were Googling Lululemon or Fabletics, they would see our company with ad creative that really differentiates us and intrigues them to click. I'd test Google Shopping and Amazon as well and see how the product performs when it was placed side by side with competition. I'd spend money on video production and UGC and hire influencers, invest in social advertising. I would target our audience on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. If the budget is there, I would even consider connected TV and podcast advertisings if we can find the right fit. I would do brand partnerships with celebrities, athletes, and influencers, both micro and macro, that align with our core audience. And I would make sure we're saturating on every level, because I want to make a big splash and I want to grow really quickly. A strategy like this is going to cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, especially if you're adding in brand partnerships, podcasts, connected TV. If you're going purely digital, it's going to cost tens of thousands of dollars. Unless you're raising money or you have a lot of money to self-fund with and have a massive appetite for risk, this is not practical for most businesses. Most businesses get to this point over time by starting small and expanding. They start with social, they start with search, and once that starts working, they're making money, they're revenue positive, they start investing into other channels. So now let's say you're starting this exact same business, but you have no money or a really limited amount of funds to invest. Advertising is probably not the right direction for you to go. It takes time to figure out the formula, and if you don't have the budget to take those early losses, it's not going to work out for you in the long run. So in this situation, I may go the content creation route and start pumping out organic TikTok and Instagram content. I may DM influencers with followings between 5,000 and 20,000 and offer to send them product for free if they would post about it, if they liked it. In this method, I'm leveraging my time instead of my money because I don't have the money to spend in advertising, or I don't have enough of an advertising budget where I think I can see success there or I can afford losses. So is it going to be a lot slower DMing people, creating organic content and building up an organic following slowly over time? Yeah, it's going to be a lot slower. However, it also offsets your need to have capital. So there's no right or wrong answers in these types of scenarios when you're making these types of decisions. Really, it's just what is most practical at the time when you're building your business. Now, for a service business, let me use our agency as an example of how we do things now and how we did things when we started. Now, we spend money on paid advertising on Facebook and Instagram. We spend money on search and on Google ads. We have a business development team that reaches out to companies and brands that we think are a good fit for what we do. I started creating content on TikTok and Instagram about a year ago, and we've seen results from that. However, there was no way for us to do that when we first started in this industry because I didn't have enough money to invest in advertising. So at that point, all I did was make cold calls and send out cold emails. And because we were small and it was just a couple of us, we did not need that many wins in order for that strategy to pay dividends. But as the company grew and we started to become more profitable, I realized, okay, it makes more sense for us to take some of this budget and put it into paid advertising. And then we expand it into different channels. And over time, we've built a very diversified sales and marketing operation, but that did not happen overnight. So when figuring out how to reach your audience, have the plan for the future, but start with what is practical and what is most achievable on day one. Okay, stage four. Iterating based on feedback. This is a fancy way of saying make strategic adjustments. When you're building a business, any data you can obtain on how the marketplace is reacting to your business is extremely valuable. And you want to pay close attention to this because it's going to help you make the right decisions and pivots. It's extremely rare that a company goes to market, doesn't make any changes, and makes $50 million. In most cases, you will be iterating on your products or services as well as your strategy and process. If you're a product business, read the reviews. See what your customers are saying about your product. Do they love it? Are they making suggestions on how to improve it? Are they asking for additional products? All of this information will help you know whether your product is in a place for scale or whether you need to iterate on your product for your next release or inventory purchase. A quick side note. Make sure you have enough reviews to make informed decisions. I've seen entrepreneurs read one bad review and completely freak out and start changing things. You want to look at the totality of what's coming in so you can get an accurate read on how your product is being received. If you're in a service business, iterate based on what's happening with leads who contact you. Are you closing business? Are you winning new business? Why are you losing those specific people who end up going in a different direction? What is your process like? How do they get in touch with you? How are they contacting you? How are you onboarding them? All of these things are things you should be tinkering with based on what's happening. You never want to just set something and let it run. You have to iterate on every aspect of your business, from your process to your marketing strategy to your advertising strategy. And those strategic adjustments over time, those incremental improvements, lead to success. It's very important at this point to reduce ego and not be rigid. Too many business owners are very rigid about their product, their processes, their business, and the rest of it. And they don't want to make changes because they think they are right. But the truth is, people will tell you whether you are right or not based on how they interact with your business. If they're not purchasing product, you have a problem. If they're not signing up for your service and they're signing up with your competition, you have a problem. It does you no good to dig your feet in the sand and not adjust. You want to figure out what it is that's not working, problem solve, and that's going to help you right the course over time. Step five, consolidate into what's working. Once you've spent enough time finding and trying ways to reach your audience, a time will come where you will have enough information to determine what's effective and what's not working. When that happens, you have to cut out what's not working and consolidate those resources into what is working. And that could be time, money, or both. If you're spending your days cold calling and cold emailing and only the cold emailing is working, stop cold calling and use those hours to cold email instead. If you're creating content and it's crushing it and you're doing a bunch of other things that are seeing little or no results, create more content, diversify into new platforms. If you're spending money on advertising and one channel is way outperforming another channel, eliminate the low performers and move that money into the high performing areas. If I'm spending $10,000 on ads, $5,000 on Instagram and $5,000 on TikTok, and TikTok isn't performing and Instagram is, move that money over to Instagram. You've now doubled the effectiveness and the return on ad spend on Instagram, and everything is more profitable. The moment you have enough data to truly determine whether something is working or not, make the decision. The key is having enough data to make informed decisions. Some of you may be listening to this and think this is so obvious. Obviously, if something's not working, I'm going to axe it and I'm going to consolidate that into what is working. But I will tell you this, I can't tell you how many businesses, both small and large, use the set it and forget it method of business, where they have the 5-6 things that they do and they just do it for years and they are just truly not evaluating the effectiveness based on each individual channel. So keep it top of mind. When something's not working, make sure, one, you have enough information that you really know it's not working and don't cut things early. But the moment you know it's not working, move it into what is working. Step 6, look for cross-selling opportunities to your existing customers. This is the last major step. It's easier and cheaper to sell to your existing customers than it is to find new customers. Plus, if you've done a good job for your customer, whether you're a service business or product business, they now trust you and are way more likely to buy from you again. If you are selling products, what other products can you develop that fulfill the needs of your customers? If you're a service provider, what other services can you offer? Don't make yourself a one-product company. Really successful businesses get people into their door through a flagship offering and then get them purchasing other products over and over again. This will also significantly impact your CAC to LTV ratio. That is the cost of acquiring a customer and the lifetime value of that customer to your company. Once you have sold someone a product, it is much cheaper to be able to reach that person again. If you're doing it through email, you're spending time and nominal fees for email services. If you are doing it through retargeting, it's cheaper to be able to do that than it is to run cold social ads. So when you get a customer, you want to always be thinking about what's the next product or service you can sell them. If you look at all of the companies that have real staying power, they've figured out how to do this really well. They build an ecosystem of offerings around the customer and get them moving from one thing to another. Companies that only focus on one product forever will over time start to decrease in revenue, and there isn't the longevity there. This is obvious to most people who are launching product-based businesses. However, service businesses often don't focus on this nearly enough. If you're good at a service and you really are providing something that adds value to the customers that you're serving, they trust you and you've built a relationship with them. And if you offer another service and you can equally deliver on value, they are going to adopt because they've already done business with you. I hope you guys have found this valuable. This is a framework that I think about all the time. And while marketing strategy, advertising strategy, a lot of that stuff changes based on the market, the time that we're in, and the platforms, these fundamentals are always true. Thanks again for listening. If you have something that you would like me to break down or focus on or talk about, DM me on Instagram or TikTok at Adam C. Benjamin. And I hope that you are able to use some of this and absolutely crush it. Thanks for listening.